Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Dr. Guy's Monday Night Gumbo with your host, Dr. Tanisha Guy, licensed professional counselor, and co-host Andrea Wise Brown, life strategist and licensed professional counselor, and Sean the Realist. Dr. Guy Monday Night Gumbo and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by talk show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of the show host. Dr. Guy Monday Night Gumbo is not intended to be therapy, but the sole purpose is to disseminate information, increase dialogue across ages, religious preference, gender, and sexual orientation. Don't forget to tune in every week to Dr. Guy's Monday Night Gumbo.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Dr. Guy's Monday Night Gumbo. So, let's see, where do we start? Today is April the 27th, and I pretty much have been saying this for the last couple of weeks, but if you are like me, this year is flying by. We are already at the end of April, and May is really my month, and I'm not just saying it's my month because my birthday is May 14th. Hint, hint to all those that are listening, I do like gifts on May 14th, but I digress. So for everyone that is tuning in tonight, whether you are calling in or listening over the internet, we're going to go ahead and get started with our show topic, because I think tonight is going to be a pretty good show, like always. Our topic for this evening is, why are people failing at love? So we do have a guest, and I cannot wait to introduce her. She has been working with couples over the last 16 years. And the great thing about her is that not only has she been working with couples and doing couples therapy, but she has a partner in crime, her spouse. And so the two of them have been co-facilitating and doing therapy together. And so with over 16 years of experience, I am sure she has a wealth of information to join us with tonight. And so I would like to introduce to all of my listeners, relationship mentor Zandra Rutledge. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you? And by the way, my birthday is May 20th.
Those wonderful Tauruses. Oh, my goodness. We're just so great.
And so, my partner in crime, his is May 21st.
Is he? I knew
yes.
I liked you guys for a reason. Like, you know, that's just one more reason why I like the two of you all. And so, thanks for joining us tonight. As always, I cannot forget about my co-host, Sean the Realist.
Hello, ladies. How you doing tonight? I'm very excited to talk about love tonight.
I am
wonderful.
Too. Like, I like the topic love, and so I'm really looking forward to some of the things that we're going to talk about tonight. And as always, we kind of like to get on the same page, and even if we're not on the same page, which pretty much happens most of the time, we're in the same book somewhere. So let's start off with our definition of love. And either one of you guys can start. Sean, Mrs. Rutledge, and, you know, because we're saying why are people failing at love, how are we defining love for tonight's show?
I'd like to hear from Sean's definition first.
What do I know about love? I'm single, and clearly all the stories that I have do not indicate I have the capacity to understand love on the same level as a licensed therapist who's been married for 15, 16 years. So I would defer to you on the idea of what love truly is, because I'm still trying to figure it out myself.
Okay, so here's the first thing. I've been married 27 years this year, and love is not just set for marriage, because love starts even from the womb. Love is for everybody. It's not just a marriage thing. And so what is love? Love is a cognitive decision to give my heart, my mind, my soul to somebody, to that relationship, to love is not even based on what you do for me. Love is I decide that I want to love you no matter what you do or say. It's a decision.
Ooh. I like that it's a decision. And Sean, you said that, you know, you would defer to Mrs. Rutledge to give her definition of love. If we're opening up this whole idea behind the definition of love and we're saying it's not just for romantic interests, then are you on the same page with our definition for love tonight?
Yeah, I just need to know which definition we're using, because there are so many variations. And I think what we can kind of say, if that's the definition we're using, is why we have chosen not to respect other people and be willing to share and be open, like the doctor has said. I think that is primarily the driving factor with the failure to love, is the failure not to be selfish.
Okay. So we're going to go with our definition that Mrs. Rutliff provided us with tonight. And I think that is a good working definition because it encompasses every form of love, whether it's romantic, platonic. And so, again, we're talking about why are people failing at love. Anybody want to start off with a few reasons why? And if we're talking about failing at love in romantic relationships, or are people just failing at being able to love in life generally?
So if we start with romantic, did we love in the first place? Because if we don't know what love looks like, how can someone love us? Because a lot of times we think what we are loving or what is love is we're looking at things. You do for me, you give me this, or rather I set conditions on what you do is love to me. Mm-hmm. And so Sean kind of said it. He was one of the things he just said a while ago is that, now I can't remember what you said, Sean, you said so much. But but it's a business proposition. If love is a business proposition, then we are basing it on my prostituting myself, so how much you pay me or how much I have to give you to love me. And love should be unconditional.
Sean, you
I don't know if I'm going to use the word prostitute. I think that might be a little excessive. I think that in any successful relationship or business agreement, there are terms and conditions. And if those terms and conditions are not met, generally, a party has the right to terminate that contract or relationship. I think the problem really is that because of the erosion of the family unit, people have become very self-centered and selfish. If we look at what families used to look like with extended families with grandmothers and aunts and uncles and what a family looks like now, it's quite different. So we've kind of gone to a point where, we're really, like we've talked about before in social media, we're kind of wrapped up in ourselves. So we're so in love with ourselves, a lot of times there's not room for someone else.
So I like what you said, because that is the main word that needs to be thrown out, selfish. How can you love somebody if you're only loving self? Because if you're in a relationship, and we're talking about love in a relationship, you can't be selfish. You've got to love that other person, so you can't just be with self. If that's the case, then why are you in a relationship?
I did hear a little clip from Eartha Kitt a while ago, and she said she was looking for someone to love her while she loved herself. So I think that's pretty much what we've kind of migrated to. A lot of women who I have interactions with are similar in that regard. They are pretty self-absorbed, and they lack the ability to either think about other people collectively or what's best for the group. I think, that might be an advantage that men have who play sports, because there's a team environment, so you understand roles. Like some women I've dated, they want to be the quarterback, the wide receiver, they want to throw the ball, they want to catch it, they want to coach, they want to do everything. So I think that can kind of be a problem, is if you don't have a definition by your agreement for your roles.
But we were talking briefly before we went on the air, and Mrs. Rutledge made some reference to the business venture that you commented on. And so can you describe that? Because I think that really takes us, and I think it gives us a different perspective when you talk about relationships, that relationships now look more like a business venture. And so I want you to kind of explain what your belief on that topic is.
That was me, Dr. Gap?
Uh-huh, that was you. You said that
it's
relationships are not really based on love, but that it's like a business partnership.
Well, like I've always told everybody, this idea is not new. The idea of romantic love is new. Being a husband or a wife was more like an office. It has changed in its definition to encompass romantic love. So, you know, if we talked about, you know, even if you go in the Bible, there was the dowry and the goats and the pigs and the land, and, you know, you didn't want someone to marry another person because they didn't have enough, and, you know, the stories are pretty prevalent throughout time. So, you know, it is a business venture, and a lot of times if those conditions aren't met, then it's not a successful business venture. I think that is something that we have been a little bit more cognizant about, but at the same time, we try to get our romantic love in the same place we get our business venture, and a lot of times, you know, those are unrealistic expectations.
Uh-huh.
Hello?
Could you hear us?
Hello?
Still here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there you
go. Yeah, so did you guys hear me? I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
You got cut off at the end.
Okay, well, I was just saying that, you know, for any situation that we look at from historical perspective, a marriage was a business agreement. You know, a wife or husband was a title like mayor. So, you know, the idea of romantic love and diamond rings, and, you know, that's relatively new. If we look at the story of Romeo and Juliet, you know, that idea was they were star-crossed lovers because from a business standpoint, they weren't supposed to be together because of their family ties.
But if we're talking about this whole idea behind why are people failing to love, is it that many people really don't have a clear definition of what love means to them, or the definition of love that they have is distorted?
It's both, and they're failing of love in marriage.
Huh. Okay.
You keep saying the business of love in marriage, but it really wasn't meant to be a business, not in the original design. The original design is not a business. It's a covenant. It's I choose to love you, and I make that covenant with God to love you.
Isn't the covenant a synonym for agreement? Isn't an agreement can be construed as a business contract?
No.
I mean, it's the same word.
A covenant and a contract are not the same word.
It's a promise. They're synonyms.
No.
Yes.
Because a covenant is more of a commitment. And a lot of people say in a contract you make a commitment, but a contract is made to be broken. But a covenant is not made to be broken.
It's not made to be broken. That's why it's in writing and is enforceable if it's broken.
Every contract has an out. Every covenant doesn't have an out. The contracts, when they're written, most of the time they're written with an out.
Hmm.
I disagree, but we can just agree to disagree.
So,
and
if we're
okay.
So we're saying that individuals potentially have the capacity to love, and we're saying open up the parameters for love beyond just romantic love, and so it could be platonic love, and so individuals could potentially be failing at both. They could potentially be failing at having healthy platonic relationships where there's the mutual reciprocal relationships of love that takes place, and there's also the individuals that are failing in romantic relationships where they are unable to either provide love or reciprocate that or receive that back from someone. And so why do we believe these individuals are struggling in those situations? Because there's a lot of people that will struggle with even knowing how to show love and And Mrs. Rutledge, you've done a lot of work with couples, and so I am sure time and time again you have heard one person in the relationship say that their partner doesn't love them because they don't show it. And
right.
So what are we saying that's preventing these individuals from being able to love? And they're in relationships. And there are several people
right.
that are experiencing that.
And so we get a lot of couples, and if we start with the couples,
mm-hmm.
we get a lot of couples in a relationship, either married or not married. It's like, he doesn't love me, she doesn't love me. And a lot of that is because I have an expectation or a condition on what love looks like to me.
Mm-hmm.
You have some who don't know what love looks like at all because they never had an example. Because love could be, well, if you don't beat on me, then I don't love you, because growing up, all I saw was my daddy beat on my mama. And so my mama stayed, and now that's love. And so if you're not beating on me, then you're not loving me. So
mm-hmm.
what is your point of reference in your life? And that's why we always have to look at the past of people that are coming together in a relationship, because their past defines who they are and how they look at love. So if my expectations are you pay my bills and I sit at home, and then when you don't do that because you're asking me to pay bills, and I say my spouse doesn't love me because they're not paying my bills and not allowing me to sit at home. So, again, all of this goes back to our point of reference or our expectations of the other person. But in a relationship, we should choose to serve and protect, because it's serving the other person. That's why I was talking about that selfish thing that Sean was talking about. If we're going to be in a relationship, we cannot be selfish. And, yes, Eartha Kitt may say, love me while I love myself. Then, yes, she's not trying to be in a relationship. She just wants you to give and do for her, serve her. But I'm not going to serve you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So another way that we fail at that love also is that because been there, done that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in a relationship and this man lied to me, or I've been in a relationship and this woman played off on me. So it's like, now when I go into the next relationship, I bring that baggage with me. And so if something they do looks like what somebody else did, I know you don't love me. Because now you're doing what that other person did that didn't love me, that I say.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sean, what do you think are some things that's preventing people from being able to find love or stay in love or be in love for that matter?
It's real easy. It's unrealistic expectations that are pretty much given to us by propaganda in the media. You know, if I would ask my grandmother to describe a successful relationship, ask my mother to describe a successful relationship, and ask someone my age, those relationships are going to look a lot different. And a lot of them are going to be mired in a progression of finance, access, you know, certain, I guess, things that people will want, you know. And I think that, you know, it still goes back to the business. You know, well, if we can't afford this, then, you know, I don't want to be with this person. Or, you know, he needs to have this type of job, or she needs to have this type of body. You know, we've become so trivial in the things that we look for that a lot of times we are really excluding the love that we say that we're seeking.
Huh.
And I will agree with you, Sean.
I do talk to a lot of females, and I always tell Dr. Guy, you know, we've kind of coined the term the 666, and I
Absolutely.
Don't mean the devil, the 6 foot guy who makes the 6 foot income, who's got the 6 pack of abs. And while that guy is there, a lot of women feel like that they are worth it, and, you know, they should be able to obtain that person. And, you know, the numbers just don't support that being the case. There aren't that many of those guys. And trust me, I know those guys. They know they're 6 feet tall, they make six figures and have six-pack abs. They're not really interested in being monogamous. So, you know, what I tend to find is those people, and more so women than men, that tend to hold out for things that are just unrealistic. Generally, if you talk to a guy, he'll be like, hey, man, I'm charging ball. Man, I got to get my money. And then I can find somebody. Like, guys aren't as unrealistic as women. Women are more prone to sit back and have a tantrum if they can't get what they want. But guys are generally like, well, you know, I guess I got to work with this until I can figure something else out.
Hmm. Okay. Well, one of the issues that you said are these unrealistic expectations. And I thought you were talking about unrealistic expectations about the meaning of love, but it sounds like it's more unreal expectations about the things that they deserve and they should have.
That's correct. When you listen to a couple, the guy will tell you, yeah, you know, I saw her in the supermarket. I hollered at her. Everything worked out. We got married. The woman will tell you it was a Wednesday. It was lightly raining. I had picked up a melon. He walked in, and our eyes met. Like, it's, women are more concerned about the story and what it looks like more so than guys. So a lot of times that's what I hear. I hear it has to look a certain way. It has to sound a certain way. And to me, that really goes back to a lot of those, I guess, physical characteristics, you know, whether it be finance, whether it be, you know, bodies, things of that nature. You know, I'm not saying that men don't, you know, talk about bodies as well, but, you know, when I talk to women, it's, they really have a, they want to hear a story. You know, you don't want to tell a guy, hey, man, you know, I ran out of gas and this guy, he stopped, he was so kind. Like, it's always a story. It's something you want to tell your girlfriend.
So let me ask you something, Sean. I definitely have heard in this generation now, because we have a 24-year-old daughter, that men, they are about that physical. And the women, they're asking for a story because they want to know some more about you. They want to get to know you. They want to have a conversation. It's not all about let's go hit it and quit it. And so that's why that they're, you know, wanting to have that conversation to tell you a story. They want you to tell them one. Are you interested in me, in my mind, in what I have to say, or just my body?
You know,
so,
what?
Do you want me to answer that for real? Okay. You know, at a certain point, like, and, you know, I'm really a good businessman. If I can't afford steak, I'll get chicken. If I can't get chicken, I'll get bologna. So, you know, at a certain point, I think in society, you know, people are pretty much replaceable commodities until you prove yourself otherwise. And I think women may not be the best at marketing themselves. There was a tweet that David Banner put out this week, and it primarily said, if you want a man to love you for your mind, then show more mind than ass. What I see is a lot of ass out here. So if you show me your ass, don't tell me how great your mind is.
Really? Okay.
Definitely.
So.
And I always tell Dr. Guy, if you are trying to market your best asset when you're going out, because that's generally what we all do, and when I meet you, I see your ass, I really am not too interested in your mind because that's not what you've chosen to showcase tonight.
Mrs. Rutledge, I know you got a response for that, but before you do, hold that thought, because we're going to go to the phone lines and see, I believe it's Joe Neckbone, see if he's calling in tonight.
Hey,
hello.
Hey, guys. I got a question for you.
Uh-huh.
All right. One of the things when I was married that kind of perplexed me was, you know, my ex used to want to hear the words, I love you, as opposed to looking at my actions that displayed I love you. Why do women want to hear those words? Are the actions not clear enough?
If you think about, and I love this book, I tell everybody, whether you're married, single, have a desire to be married or single, I think it's just an awesome book, and it's called Five Love Languages by Gary Chapman. And I think once you read that book, it makes sense when you have scenarios like yours. So in the book, Gary Chapman says that everyone has a love language, and there are five different types. And the five different types of love languages are: one is gifts, so those are the individuals that like the material items. The other ones are words of affirmation, if you're telling me you love me. The other one is quality time. I don't care about the gifts. I don't care about what you say, but if you can spend time with me, I understand that you love me. The other one is acts of service, and then the last one is physical touch. So of those five different love languages, everyone has a love language, and we're not just talking about how you communicate in intimate relationships, but this is how you communicate to people, period, whether it's friends,
right,
family members, spouses. So what your wife was telling you is that you're doing, so you were speaking your love language to her, which was your love language, which is okay. But she was telling you, I don't interpret love that way. And how I interpret love is through X, Y, and Z. It's through the words. I need to hear it. And so you said, I don't care what you need to hear, because I'm telling you in my language, and if you don't like my language, then that's okay. So if you could have taken the time to actually listen to her language and then communicate in her language, then she probably would have reciprocated back and communicated in your language as well.
Mm. Interesting.
Wow, that was
hey,
on point.
Yeah. Hey, I need something from you guys. I need an email address because since you guys did your last show, I started a newsletter, and you might find it quite interesting.
Absolutely. For all of us, well, we all obviously have different email addresses.
Right.
But my email, and then I'll let everybody else provide them with theirs, but the email that you can reach me at is info@stccounseling.com.
STC?
Mm-hmm. STCCounseling.com.
Okay. I'll send it to you, and then you can distribute it if you want.
Absolutely, and we will definitely talk about it on the show, so I can't wait to get it.
Oh, don't worry. I'm going to probably send it out tonight. I'm already four issues in, so I'll show you how to get
all
the back. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what it is, in a nutshell, I do a lot of research, and I come up with a lot of studies in my research, and I share them with my friends.
Yeah, exactly. We want to make sure that you get that to us, because we'll tell more people every week, actually. We'll let them know what the current article is for that week. Are you putting it out weekly or monthly?
Whenever I have a chance, because, you know, Joe is kind of busy. You know, Joe Nickbone has a lot of things going. And I don't want to take over the show, but I just wanted to just ask you that real quick.
Well, thank you, Joe Nickbone, and I'm so glad you asked that question, because I hear that so much working with couples, and I'm going to go to Mrs. Rutledge, because I know that obviously 10 years of working with couples married over 20 years plus, how would you answer the question for Joe Nickbone?
I couldn't have answered it any better than you did, because that was right on point.
Okay, well, we will go with that.
But
so next
hold on,
time.
I mean, I'm sorry, I got cut off.
Go ahead.
You answered it perfectly, because my husband and I had that same scenario, because his wife was a words of affirmation person, and he was undoubtedly a person of doing. And like you said, he didn't invest enough to find out. And when we do love languages, we want to love somebody in our language. And I am a words of affirmation person. I kept telling my husband I loved him, and he was a quality time person. So he was trying to show me he loved me by wanting to spend time. And he told me, don't tell me you love me. Because I was trying to love him with my words, and he was trying to love me with his actions. And both of us felt in love. But when we started realizing what the love language was, man, it took our marriage to a whole nother level, and it really is what turned us into doing what we do today because of
it. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm so glad you asked that question, because I think that it's multiple. Not I think, I know for a fact that there are multiple individuals that are in relationships, and they're just not speaking each other's love language, and they feel like they're hitting themselves against the wall, because they're like, wait, I keep showing it, what else do I do, and they don't understand it. But if couples take the time to really understand what the individual's love language is, it can definitely help and grow the relationship. And if you're someone and you're saying, well, I don't know what my love language is, it's not a problem. You can read the book. You can take a quiz. It gives you an idea of what your love language is. And you may not have one. You may have one or two. But definitely, if you understand what your mate's love language is, you can express that to them. And when you're looking to date someone, now you can tell them, this is my love language. This is what I need from you. You can tell me all day long, but I'm really an acts of service type of person. So if you don't show any of that, I really don't understand that you're communicating that you love me.
Now, also, love language is not just a romantic relationship, but it can be used with your children. It can be used in any relationship because all five of those languages are a part of us. But which one takes precedence? And so when you figure those, when you read that book and you find out what your love language is and what the languages mean, you can start looking at your friends, at your coworkers, at your children, and you can tell what their love language is. Because that's how they try. That's what they show the most of.
Yeah. And again, Jonequan, always it's a pleasure having you on, and we do look forward to your emails and that post. And continue to stay tuned, okay?
Oh, no problem. I always listen to you guys. I always catch you on Mondays.
All right. Thanks. All right, you guys, I have an interesting question that I want to pose to you guys and to also our listeners at the present time. Has anyone ever met a family member, a loved one, a friend who continues to say that they cannot find someone or all their relationships go south or no one loves them, like their family members don't love them, they don't feel like they're loved by their friends? And that's just their story. They always continue to report that nobody loves them. Do you guys know anybody like that, or you've met someone like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So for those individuals, because obviously I think we all have encountered one of those personality types, what do we say to that person that feels like no one ever loves me, everyone is always against me, their relationships are not what they want them to be? What do we say to that person? Because there's definitely a lot of people that are experiencing that.
You actually might be right. I think some of them are right.
Sean?
Some of them are right because what they keep saying, no one loves me, I'm not loved. Well, what's their definition of love? What does love look like to them? And that's a question we ask a lot of couples, especially when they start coming in like that. They don't love me. What does love look like to you? That's a question a lot of people have never asked themselves that. They don't know what love looks like to them. And so how can somebody love you?
I think that's a really good question for people too, who have experienced that or are thinking that or have verbalized that to people, is to really ask, what does love look like? And I know for some people it's difficult to process that whole thought because they've had some pretty traumatic experiences. And so the people who were in their lives who were supposed to love them and take care of them didn't do that. And so as a result, they have this distorted image of what love should look like or has looked like in the past. So now they kind of clump everybody into this category as not loving them. Sean, you know, your statement was that maybe it's true. I don't know if I would go with that, that maybe it's true that no one cares for that individual who feels that way, but I do believe it's their interpretation of what love is. It's the reason why they kind of feel that way. So maybe for that person, they have to do some self-work before they can start looking for love from other people. And I think, Mrs. Rollins, you commented on that earlier, that people sometimes have to do their own work to really understand how to love anybody else or even to receive love if they can't love themselves.
That is true. And I like what you said, that, you know, some people do have some jacked-up relationships. So the truth, because one of the things I wanted to point out was the relationship of love that's unconditional, or what the design was, is like a mother and a child. But my husband pointed out to me some people have jacked up relationships and their moms didn't take care of them. They may have been drug dealers. They may have been. So if you use that, the first thing they say is, well, that can't be because my mother sold me for a $10 bag. But the actual design is a mother loves a child unconditionally no matter what they do. They may go through bumps in the road. They may do something, go to jail, whatever, but a mother will come back and still love her child. She may not have loved what that child did, but she still loves her child. But for some reason, when we're in relationships, we don't love like that. It's always, if you do some, I'm out. Mm-hmm. So the original design is to love unconditionally if we say that we love. But a lot of times we say that we love, but we really don't, especially if we fall out of love and say, well, I've fallen out of love. Well, if you fell out of love, you probably were not in love in the first place.
You know what? You bring us to a valid point tonight when you said that people fall out of love quite easily. And so everyone in 2015, I'm sure, knows that the current divorce rate is 52%. And it has been rising, seems like, every year. And so you have a higher chance of getting a divorce if you get married than you do of staying together. And so I don't know about you guys, but for me that's an alarming statistic, especially as a single woman. That's an extremely alarming statistic that there's a 52% chance of divorce. And so what is it that you believe? And I'm going to ask you, Mrs. Rutledge, because you've been married 27 years, right?
Yes.
Okay. For someone who has been married 27 years, what role does love play in that relationship? And how does love keep you committed to that relationship? Because we have so many people, again, that experience hard times in their marriages, and their response is, okay, no-fault divorce, I'm out.
Well, the first thing is going into a relationship, when you get married, everybody, when you go to the showers and you go to all these places, it's like, oh, we're in love, oh, it's going to be happily ever after. That's a lie in the first place. So let me just tell you, in love, you're going to encounter bumps and bruises. There will be conflict. And conflict is not a bad thing. People say we don't argue. When people tell me they don't argue in their relationship, I stand back from them because they're not living life together, because you're going to have conflict. The reason I say conflict is a good thing, it's just like when your body gets sick. Your body is trying to tell you something's not right and you need to get it fixed. When you have conflict in a relationship, that's telling you something is not right and you need to fix it. But unfortunately, when we come to the conflict, we don't want to fix it. We want to run from it. But if you take the time to sit there and love that person, so love means grace and mercy. That means giving grace, which is something that's undeserved when you don't deserve it. That's the hardest time to give it. It's easy to say I love you when everything is going great. But when things are going wrong, oh, now I don't love you, because you don't want to accept and you don't want to deal with the conflict. But once you start dealing with that conflict and you see that it's either you miscommunicate it or you just looked at it differently, once you get into the conflict and you start resolving it the right way by having conversation, once you overcome that conflict, then guess what? We learn from our mistakes and we get better. So every time, you know, as they say, you have trials, how can you say that you've got a testimony or that you've come through anything when you haven't gone through anything? You've got to go through in your marriage. And so love plays the biggest part, because I choose to love my husband, no matter what happens, the conflict, the things, the arguments that we go through, we're going to choose to stay and have a conversation and figure out how we can come through this so that we can get better at it. And once I made that choice, because in the eighth year of marriage, it was almost like, hey, this ain't working. And the good thing is we went to a marriage enrichment and we learned about love languages and we started making that decision to love and figured out how to love each other. That's what turned us around. And we've been going at it after that 8 year. We have been trying to love, and we go through conflicts even after 27 years. We're still going through conflicts daily. Maybe they're not as big every day, but there's something we need to talk about and change about each other, or something we need to do differently so that we can get better at this marriage daily. Mm-hmm. So it's not all roses, but it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Sean, what do you think? Do you think the reason why we're seeing such high divorce rates, or one of the reasons is that people are, their definition of love is jaded or unrealistic, and so as a result, they leave their marriages?
I think it's a very good point. I don't think it's the only thing that goes into it. A lot of times you have people that set their relationships up so when something goes wrong, they can leave, you know, doing the prenups. And, like, it's more about options. Like, you know, my grandmother, she really didn't have too much option to get divorced. You know, my mother, a little bit more. You know, my classmates, a lot more. So it's more about options. And the perception of your options, which may be skewed. I'm a real big proponent. I like Chris Brown. I think he made a mistake with whatever happened in the car with Rihanna, but I wasn't there. I don't know. But because we're so judgmental as a society, we haven't really allowed him to make a mistake because he's a public figure. We all make mistakes. Perhaps him and Rihanna loved each other. Maybe they could have reconciled, but, you know, we were really talking about, well, what type of message does it send to women if Rihanna gets back with Chris Brown? You know, you're not really allowed to make mistakes anymore because of social media, because of what your friends think. You go through a rough patch and it's, oh, girl, leave him. Hey, man, them old fish in the sea, I don't know why you messing around wasting your time with her. So it's just a perception of the option. Hmm. And I would also like to add, I appreciate you touching on the love languages because mine is touch, and that explains why I used to fall in love in a strip club every three songs in my 20s. My 20s makes so much more sense.
Let me ask Sean a question. Why do you say the grandparents had options, didn't have an option, but people have options now? What's the difference?
Well, if you look at historically speaking, people from who were baby boomers and a little bit before that time, or my grandmother was born in 1920, you married someone to live within 5 to 10 miles from you. So that was a very small pool of people. Women didn't have the option to earn a substantial living. They could do some things, but they weren't able really to support themselves unless they did something illicit. You know, as we move forward in society, women become more educated, go to college, you have your desegregation. So there are more options that open up work-wise, you know, from being caregivers, nurses, teachers. So now you're able to earn for yourself and support yourself. So now your options open. You've gone to college. You meet people from a different region, perhaps a different part of the country. Now you can get on the Internet and talk to anybody anywhere. So, you know, your sphere of influence has grown dramatically. So because your sphere has grown, you feel like your options have grown. So that's why people are a little bit more reluctant to make these commitments, because they feel like if I just hold out, I can get exactly what I want. Hey, my grandmother knew the 15 guys in her 10-mile radius, and she was like, well, it's either Frank or Justin. I know it's got to be one of them.
Well, I think that still comes back down to a choice, because everybody wasn't in that sphere of 15 or 20. Even my grandparents, who were right now would be over 100, they had options to, outside of those 15, 20, they had a whole lot of options to go somewhere, because you had the service and all that. But it was a choice they made. You didn't divorce. You stayed there and you worked it out. But I think what the problem is that today's generation, we don't want to stay there and work it out, because, as you were saying, propaganda of society is telling us, girl, I wouldn't stay with him. Man, you need to get rid of her. That you don't need to be monogamous. And you made a valid point. You said with people, what they're saying on the Internet, we don't allow for mistakes, because we're listening to all these people saying, oh, Rihanna don't need to get back with Chris because he might do the same thing. But they're not allowing Rihanna to make a decision to love Chris even through the mistakes he made, and that's the problem. In relationships, get everybody else out of your relationship. You have to make your own decision with your own mind on how you're going to love somebody, regardless of what those people say, because sometimes when your girlfriend or your guy friend is telling you, man, you need to leave that person you're with because they did this, this, and this, as soon as you leave them, they're trying to walk in the door with that person. You can't have relationships based on somebody else and what they think, because they're not living that relationship with you. You are.
Right. So
valid point.
I do think it really goes back to, like you said, the propaganda and the options. You know, I can kind of even speak for myself. I've talked to doctor guys sometimes, and, you know, I've been entertaining people from all over the country. So it's kind of interesting. My friends and I, we've traveled, and I'm not going to say we have a disdain for American women, but, you know, there is a different perception we have of American women than women of other cultures, where it's more patriarchal. So, you know, we have that choice. So it's kind of interesting to listen to you say the things that you're saying, and me, you know, when I talk about options. Like, if I don't want to date American women, I don't even have to talk to them.
But
that's not something my grandmother or grandfather had a choice to do without necessarily joining the service.
I think everyone has, in 2015, I would definitely agree with you when say that people have more options now. And when I look back, when you were talking about your grandmother from the 1920s, I don't know if it was necessarily that she didn't have options of individuals in her community, but I believe the whole definition of what marriage and family meant was different. And so it has definitely evolved into a completely different beast at this point. And so the whole the nuclear family, mom and dad and children, that existed, that was valued, and so individuals tried to keep that, even when there was infidelity, even when there was physical abuse. The idea was that you stay in this marriage no matter what, because they saw their parents staying in marriages, even though they were toxic. But in particular, and I can only speak for the stats on the African-American race, but when you talk about 70% of kids being raised in single-parent households, the definition of family now looks different. And so the nuclear family now looks like potentially mom and maybe a grandma. And those are the two caregivers for that particular child. And that has been happening for a very long time now. So I think that has something to do with relationships and our vision, or what we believe relationships look like and what we go out to model. So if my modeling of a relationship looks like, and you said that, Sean, that you guys travel out of the country where it is more patriarchal, well, that definitely takes place. And again, this is only for the African-American culture, which is a matriarchal culture. You do have women that are typically the heads of their households. And so I think because of that, this definition, what we're talking about, what does love look like, it looks differently, because love looked different in their lives, especially when it's a romantic love. And so when we talk about what are things that individuals can do, Mrs. Rutledge made comment to kind of people working on themselves. Sean, you made a valid point about people not buying into the propaganda of what they believe marriage looks like and what it should be, but having realistic expectations. People don't talk about the difficulty about marriage. And Mrs. Rutledge, you made mention to that after 27 years of marriage, you guys still have conflict. You still have disagreements. You still have arguments. And you guys move beyond that. I can think back to my experiences growing up, and my parents are still together, and they have been together, I feel like, forever, obviously, my entire life. But everyone who has encountered or met my parents, even growing up, was like, oh, my goodness, they're just like two high school sweethearts in love with each other. And so even today, I'm in my 30s, soon to be joining the 40 Club, and people still say the same thing about my parents. And so Sean, and you and I have had this conversation before, that when I think about what love looks like, I go back to the modeling that I watched my parents. And so for me, there is this belief that people can live together, have disagreements, and still wake up the next morning and still love each other. And so I don't have children. Sean, you don't have children. And so, Mrs. Rutledge, I'm going to deflect to you on this particular question. What is it about someone who has a child and the child does something that makes you angry, but it does not cut you off from still loving your child? You may be very disappointed, angry, irate. The next morning you still wake up and love them no matter what. I get it that that's a child, but that's, to me, a truly authentic, unconditional love. Does that love only exist with children, or is it possible to actually have that love exist in a romantic relationship with a partner? Can you look at a partner and say, you know what, I didn't like that you did that. Because of that, I'm angry, I'm irate, I'm so vexed with you right now. but I can still wake up tomorrow and love you. Is that possible? Like, I believe it's possible, but again, I'm not married, nor have I been in a relationship for 20 plus years. So is that possible when we're talking about love?
Yes, that is possible because love is generic. And so being generic, then yes, it can go across all of those lines. And so, yes, in my relationship, sometimes don't like my husband. I didn't like what he did, but I love him. And that love is always there. It gets clouded with the hatred or something you've done or being mad or things like that. Love gets clouded, but it's still there. Just like the sun is behind the clouds, when the rain comes and when it moves out of way, the sun is still there. And so, yes, when my child does something, I may be mad, disappointed, but I still love them. And you can take that same love, because that is the example of love in all of your relationships.
Uh-huh. Sean.
But you have to make that choice, though. It's still, again, that cognitive decision.
Uh-huh. You and I have had a conversation off the air about therapeutic or guiding theories that we utilize in practice that we believe help people come up with change or create change in their lives. And that theoretical framework is cognitive behavioral therapy. And it's the belief that whatever I think, or the saying, I think, therefore I am. So if I don't like a certain emotion that I'm experiencing, the first thing for me to change is the thought process that's connected to that. If I don't like a specific behavior, then I need to change the thought process to now change that behavior. And so it sounds like what I'm hearing you saying is that it is the same for love, that people have to make a conscious decision to decide to be in love and continuously think about that or be cognizant of the fact that this is a decision that they have made.
That is correct, to attach the emotion to that cognition of
mm-hmm.
thinking about love, to attach that emotion. Yes, that is exactly.
The scary part about love, in my opinion, is that love is an emotion. And we talk about these things in sessions all the time, the difference between what I am feeling versus what I am thinking and what I am doing. And I find it interesting that sometimes people don't separate them. They just kind of clump everything in a category as an experience. And so they're very different. And so what I am thinking is distinctively different from how I am feeling and what I am doing. And so the idea behind love, and this is my question, is love an idea? Is love an emotion, or is it one and the same? And Sean,
go ahead, Sean. I would say love is a decision of that emotion and idea. It's all one, but it's still a decision that you have to make.
Mm-hmm. So it would
How I'm going to live with that person. I mean,
mm-hmm.
because I've got to live with you in this way. And so it's making that decision on how I'm going to live with you.
Mm-hmm.
So am I going to live with you as an enemy? Or, in fact, if I'm not going to live with you in love, then why am I living with you in a relationship anyway?
Good point. I think that the struggle with dealing with love as an emotion is that emotions are very fluid. And so I could wake up in the morning and just be irritated, just in a bad mood, just because, like, for example, today was pretty stormy, it was raining out, and so when I woke up this morning, I was like, I don't like rainy days. But 2 hours later, the sun was out, the temperatures warmed up, my emotions changed. And that was within an hour or two time frame. So because emotions are very fluid and they change, like I say, Dallas weather changes, I think that that's one of the difficult parts that we have in relationships or just loving people, is because we forget that not only is love an emotion, but as you're saying, it's a cognition. It's a cognitive process that is also connected to an emotion that we feel. And our thought process are a little bit more static than our emotions. And I think, Sean,
yes.
Do we still have you there? I think we may have dropped him. Try to get him back on to see what his comments are. Sean, are you still with us? Well, hopefully we'll get you back before the end of the show to find out what your final thoughts are.
my husband wants to make a, he wants to make a, he wants to say something on that, that you just said about it being fluid.
Sure.
He's been waiting to get in. He tried to call, but he didn't.
He should have came in earlier.
Well, doctor, you said that love is fluid. I would disagree a bit with that. I would say it's like water, but not fluid. Huh. The reason I would make the distinction is because water can be loose and flow. Mm. Water can be solid like ice. It can be steaming. Now, if I decide to attach a glacier-like solid solidness to my love emotion, then that means I've decided not to let anything dissuade or break down my emotion of love that I have attached to someone. Now, if I decide that my love really isn't going to be rooted in anything, it might be fluid, it might flow like water, or even it can be steamy and passionate, but I wouldn't say that it's like fluid. I would say more like water.
Ooh, I like that. I'm such a visual person, so in my head, I'm visualizing the solidness of it, like an ice glacier. And now I can understand that obviously it has the fluidity of the water, but it doesn't mean that it has to be. And that's the catch,
right,
is that you're dealing with something that can be fluid but has the capacity to hold a solid form. But in order to hold a solid form, it can't be done by itself. It has to have, in the case of ice, it has to be frozen. So in the case of a relationship, it has to have the work and the cognitions to solidify that emotion.
Exactly.
I like that. I'm going to have to get some ice cubes in my office. I'm going to use the ice cubes in the office. I'm going to tell you guys about it when I do it. But, okay, so I do like that. So, listeners, because I know we're getting ready to wrap up for this evening. And Mr. Rutledge, stay on the line because I'm going to pose this question to you. And Sean, I don't know if you were able to chime back in. If you are, we'll get your closing remarks. And so tonight we've been talking about why are people failing at love. And so we're saying that there's no one set reasons. There's numerous reasons why an individual may be failing at love. But what we're saying is, and I believe everybody on the panel agrees tonight, that everyone has the capacity to love. What we do know is that everyone loves in a different way. And because your love language does not mirror another person's love language does not mean that you're not communicating the same thing. It just means that you have to speak that other person's language. And so in our closing words, Mr. and Mrs. Rutledge, what would you like to say to our listeners tonight who may be dealing with failing relationships or just dealing with loving themselves?
Well, for me, I would say that if you're having trouble, it is very important that you define what love is for you.
Mm-hmm.
And after you make that definition, focus on making that definition happen. And here's why. Because if you're just trying to go somewhere without a destination in mind, wherever you go can turn into your destination. But if you know what you're looking for in terms of love, then you'll know how to get there. And between you and the object of your love, you should be able to come together and reach the correct destination.
Ooh, all right. Thank you, Mr. Rutledge. Mrs. Rutledge, any closing remarks for our listeners tonight?
So when we're talking about love, again, you have to define it for yourself. But if we're talking about we want to love someone and we want somebody to love us, then one key thing I want to make sure that we need to do is take the selfishness out. You cannot, if you want to be married or be in a relationship, you cannot be selfish. And if you want to be selfish, then you need to be by yourself. Selfish, you need to be by self. So if you want to be in a relationship, take selfish out.
You know what? Thank you both for your final comments. You guys, as always, it's been a blast. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Sean, you got any closing remarks for us before we sign off? Oh, you guys, if Sean had any closing ones, you guys are going to have to get them next week. So
I don't really want to hear them.
I don't even know if I want to hear them for tonight. I don't know. You guys, don't forget to Facebook it, tweet it, pass it on. Don't forget to tell a friend about Dr. Guy's Monday Night Gumbo. Thanks to all the listeners for calling in. Mr. and Mrs. Rutledge, thank you guys for joining us tonight. And you guys, we have some information coming up. All of us are doing a couples retreat, and these two powerhouse or this powerhouse couple will be at our couples retreat in Irving, Texas in June. So stay tuned for more information about that. But everyone have a blessed and safe night, and I will talk to you guys next week. Be blessed.
Bye.
Bye-bye.